It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. President Obama is set to deliver his final State of the Union address to a joint session of Congress tonight. You can hear that speech tonight on 90.5 WESA at 9 p.m., immediately following the rebroadcast of this program, Essential Pittsburgh. His speech is expected to be non-traditional, focusing more on his legacy as president and less on work with the legislature. And many speculate that the president will also return to his original campaign mantra of hope, encouraging every American that they have the ability to succeed. Here to preview the president's address is Jerry Schuster. He's University of Pittsburgh Professor of Presidential Rhetoric and Political Communication. Jerry Schuster, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Paul, for asking.
And we'd like to hear from you with your questions and comments at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh at wesa.fm. And on Twitter at ESSPGH, what would you like to hear the president talk about tonight? Is he entitled to speak of his legacy, as many feel that he is? Again, the number 412-246-2002 is the number to call to join our conversation. And Jerry Schuster, when political pundits say that this speech is going to be non-traditional, what exactly does that mean?
Well, typically, the President of the United States is required by constitutional rules that he provides a State of the Union message. Obviously, in the early days, it was in writing and sometimes hand-delivered, but since Harry Truman, it's nationally, now internationally, televised. So basically, the message is much like the CEO of a major corporation. His role is to establish the current status of the nation, and then identify some of the issues that affected progress, and then identify those areas of success. And fourth, and no less important than the others, is the fact that the president would typically establish a new direction or ideas for improvement in the key areas, domestic and international.
You brought up something interesting. You mentioned that it was Truman, that his one of his State of the Union addresses was the first one ever televised.
Correct. Now, it wasn't televised live. It was recorded for replay later, but he was the first to make use of television for State of the Union address.
So prior to that, were people listening in? Was it broadcast on radio?
Yes, it was.
Okay, so this has always been designed, even though the president is standing there in Congress. He's at the Capitol and he's speaking to the members of Congress. It's sort of spoken. He's speaking past them in a sense, right? That's kind of the idea.
Typically, yes. Basically, when it was just radio, obviously there was a listening audience, and there may have been some indications of international audience orientation, but primarily now. The president, as he has pretty much said, or his staff has said, he wants to bounce off Congress and go directly to the constituents, you and I, and see how his message plays with us about are things as negative as the press typically suggests they are, and if so, how bad, that kind of thing.
Sure.
So he has an international audience, the physically present audience. He has the national TV audience and so many others looking at certain aspects of the speech. So this is what's allowed by social media and television primarily.
Right. So broadcasting would have changed this. Because,
dramatically.
And social media as well now today?
Correct. Because it can be streamed live. It can be on YouTube, or people can start making comments almost immediately. And in fact, they do. You'll hear some of the analysts after the speech talk about some of the comments that were tweeted and so on throughout the course of the speech as they take issue with certain statements that the president makes.
But the legacy thing just keeps coming up with people. This is the president's last State of the Union address, President Obama's last State of the Union address. And so when a president is speaking and giving this is the longest that he will appear generally before the American public. When he does this for the last time, does he have a little more leeway? Is there sort of an unspoken, unwritten rule here that says, go ahead and talk about the good things that have happened over the last 7 or 8 years, or even the bad ones if you want to?
Well, to some extent, I think that's probably true. It's his opportunity to say, here's what we intended, here's what occurred, and here's why it did or did not. But to exclusively focus on that, I think there are many people in government, and we're not talking specifically politicians, who are taking issue with the president's legacy focus because it becomes more almost exclusively like a political speech than it does a report to the nation on the status of the nation. And I think that's where many of the critics are having a problem because, one of the things that the president is criticized most for is that he established a pretty hefty agenda when he first took office 8 years ago or 7 years ago, and not a lot in their eyes. I'm not saying that he can't go back and say we've done this, this, and this. Obviously, there are successes according to his analysis, but there are areas where not much movement has occurred, and people want to know whether or not he's going to be very candid about why these things haven't occurred and whether he's going to lay blame at the feet of Congress or whether he's going to have to assume responsibility for that.
Well, wouldn't it be a little bit of both? Because you would think that, since the president got into office, we have the Affordable Care Act. On the diplomatic front, we have the Iran nuclear deal. The unemployment numbers have been, and whether this is a true indication of where we stand with the economy or not, the unemployment figures are dramatically better than they were when he took office.
Right.
So he can point to those things. So will he mix that in with also, but we could have done so much more if Congress wasn't constantly trying to block what I want to do.
I'm suggesting that's probably the way the agenda is going to play out. And, we can't forget either the new diplomatic relations with Cuba and a couple of other areas, the trade pacts.
Right.
They may have been approved, but he's done so much by executive order, which superimposes itself on the rights of members of Congress to vote on those things. And in reality, they have not been voted on. They've been, forced on the nation by his executive order. And that hasn't played well with the way our system typically goes. He's probably, I don't know the exact number, but I'm guessing at this point in time, he's established more executive orders than any other modern president. I may be wrong on that, but I don't think so, especially in the last probably 6 months, because he has not been able to, achieve certain goals. And so he chooses to go around Congress and then use the executive order in order to achieve the goal.
Well, there was, the executive order last week on guns and background checks. And will there be maybe a heightened tension in that room tonight?
Oh, definitely. I think, typically when you watch the State of the Union address, you'll see areas of applause, and then you'll see the opponents or opposition, whether they're Republicans or Democrats or both, for that matter, they may sit on their hands during those periods of times whenever it would suggest they're opposed to the stands that are taken. There will be times when the focus is on areas of patriotism, when, the empty chair that will be next to the First Lady tonight is expected to symbolize all of the victims of gun violence. And I suspect that most people will applaud at that point, but where he takes it from there is where the opposition is going to be very pronounced.
Well, we'd all like to be in that room, but one of the interesting things is watching on television and the way they will cut to different people in the audience. And the members of Congress and their reactions. It's always interesting to see what the director of the telecast decides to serve up to the American people. We're talking with Jerry Schuster, who is University of Pittsburgh Professor of Presidential Rhetoric and Political Communication here on the program today. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. And we'd like to hear from you and what you want to hear from the president tonight. What would you like to hear him address that perhaps he has not addressed to your satisfaction? And we know you probably have a little more time because this is a, you know, we have this winter weather going on. The wolves of winter are barking at your door. You're huddled inside with your provisions trying to survive. And your only link to the outside world is the radio, or so we'd like to think. So why don't you give us a call at 412-246-2002 as we continue our conversation with Jerry Schuster. And Jerry, some of the more more progressive members of Congress, the Warren wing, as it's called, and others are urging the president to go bold, as they're putting it, and show the same boldness on economic populism in his final State of the Union address that he showed last week on guns. What do you think about the possibility that we'll see this tonight, perhaps on economic issues or other issues?
I don't expect that he's going to be terribly focused on that. As much as he would like to see improvement, that's just not his forte, and he's not achieved a great deal of success along those lines. And people would argue that even though unemployment, for example, is down to 5%, now, that hasn't necessarily come about as a result of his economic packages or his promotion of some philosophical areas to achieve economic stability. That's just not been him. The other areas that I think we're going to have some definite differences will be in international diplomacy, the Mideast, the Syrian crisis. Even though the Iranian deal has passed, there's still going to be lots of criticism of that. And there, I think when he mentions that, when the audience is panned, they're going to focus on some of the opponents of that particular program very, very quickly, and it'll be very pronounced.
And the Trans-Pacific partnership, that agreement, That's something he's still trying to sell to Congress, isn't he?
Yes, indeed it is.
Okay. Now, do you think he'll mention the election at all, throw his support behind anyone?
He indicated that he would not support any particular candidate until after the primaries.
But will he do anything indirectly? You know, will there be something that we can kind of read between the lines, Jerry? If not endorse a Democratic candidate, maybe indirectly address things like Donald Trump's, what people have perceived as anti-Muslim rhetoric by Donald Trump?
Well, I think he may reference that not so much by a specific focus on a statement made by Trump, but rather that all politicians of major significance, meaning the candidates for the presidency, obviously, should take a more softened approach as it comes to, or let's say, a more polished approach as it comes to dealing with their opponents and start talking issues rather than going after somebody in such denigrating and disparaging ways.
Go ahead.
Some of his staff indicated that might occur, but they also indicated that he's not going to deal very much with what the future holds, but rather what he's achieved in the past. And that's where I think the problems are going to be created. Focusing on his legacy, he doesn't determine the legacy. Actually, history does, as you well know, because when George Bush, 43, left office, obviously our approval rating was very low. But now that we look back a little more closely, it's not nearly as low as it was then. It's not great by any means. It's not like Bill Clinton's. But at the same time, as history will show, he probably is not the failure as president that others thought. I think that there's an area where President Obama is probably more open to criticism because he seems so much more candid about his personality and his vanity. He seems of late to be very focused on having people approve of what he's doing. And gets very annoyed publicly and privately when people don't, you know, the Congress in particular.
Again, we're talking with Jerry Schuster, Dr. Jerry Schuster, University of Pittsburgh Professor of Presidential Rhetoric and Political Communication. The number to join the conversation, 412-246-2002. And we have Laurie from McDonald on the line. Laurie, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with Jerry Schuster.
Hi, I wanted to correct his opinion of executive orders because for 8 years, George W. Bush issued 291 executive orders. And thus far, President Obama has issued 227.
And in fact, along with what you're saying, Laurie, and hang on with us here for a moment, Bruce on Twitter says he has tallied executive orders and President Obama's 227 executive orders, according to Bruce, Bill Clinton, or actually Ronald Reagan is at the top of the list with 381, followed by Bill Clinton with 364, and then George W. Bush at 291. So according to our listeners, Jerry, you're a little off with your figures.
Yes, I am indeed, and I apologize for that, but it's always a learning experience. But remember, we still have a year to go, and the president of late is issuing I'm not suggesting for a moment.
He'd have to issue like one a week.
But by the same token, with another year in office, I suspect recalcitrant Congress and some of the more critical issues will also force him to go the route of executive orders anyway.
But Jerry, if he issued one a week, if he issued 50 more between now and when the next president is sworn in, that would only put him at 277, and he would still trail Reagan, Clinton, and Bush. So our listeners are you know, sometimes they have your back, sometimes they make you come correct.
Well, that's one of the reasons that keeps us all honest, and I'm happy that they have, that's a learning experience for me, and I do appreciate being corrected. That's an area that's important, and, perhaps it's the timing of some of his executive orders, but I guess that's why many have thought that his orders, and I should have researched that a bit more myself, but nonetheless, it's important that we are all accurate. So I'm glad they called.
I am too, and we have a few more minutes. You can join us at 412-246-2002. That's the number to call. I wanted to go back to, and Ronald Reagan has come up in this conversation, not surprisingly. When you talk about I think a lot of people would agree with you that when it comes to a legacy, that's for the historians, people like yourself, people who are, who are keeping the record, if you will, to determine what the president's legacy is. But don't a lot of the modern day presidents, when they realize that they're speaking to the in a State of the Union address for the last time, don't they try to kind of massage that a little bit? Didn't Reagan, and correct me if I'm wrong, or maybe the listeners will, but didn't Ronald Reagan say in a State of the Union speech, we set out to change the world, we set out to change the country and we ended up changing the world? I'm not sure if that came up in a State of the Union speech or not, but those kinds of things where the president is casting an eye toward, trying to throw a few things out there for people to glom onto.
Well, there's no question that any of the presidents have attempted to establish a more positive legacy, and they will kind of force the issue by calling to our attention the important accomplishments that they've made throughout the tenure of their presidency. But at the same time, historians will react much more, how shall I say, favorably in terms of the evaluation. And it's always better easier to do that when you have the background and hindsight to be able to make that evaluation of a president. The president's talking now, and he's heavily involved in it. So he has to promote the direction he's taking. Otherwise, he hasn't accomplished much at all, and he's even suggesting to us that he hasn't. That wouldn't be appropriate either. But I think here again,
it's a fine line.
The purpose of the State of the Union, It's identify what the status of the union is at the moment, identify what the real issues are, and what some of the proposals might be in order to correct any deficiencies, and kind of pass around a share of the blame and responsibility for those areas where we haven't succeeded. That, I think, is pretty much the purpose of the State of the Union. But merely to promote the legacy, that, again, is where the critics are having an issue.
Let's take a call from Joe on Mount Washington. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
Welcome.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Well, I was just going to welcome you, but go ahead with your comment or question.
Yes, I'm calling regarding the issue of executive orders. Obviously, some of your callers took issue with the professor's statement on the executive orders, but I believe the chief complaint with Republicans and conservative and libertarians as well is the scope of the executive orders and how they have sometimes contradicted or have sort of flown in the face of congressional intent with regarding the laws.
Well, let me ask you, before Dr. Schuster responds, when you say that, Joe, the president, we had a Republican senator from Pennsylvania, Pat Toomey, who was trying to work with a fellow senator, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, on legislation for background checks, and it went nowhere. So isn't the president trying to align himself? I mean, aren't there other members of Congress, for example, the most recent executive order and the one everyone's talking about concerns the background checks. So does this really go against Congress when you consider some of the legislation that has been proposed by Republicans in the Senate, for example, like Pat Toomey?
Well, for the example of the gun executive order, which I don't believe has been issued yet, that actually does not fly in the face of congressional intent because it essentially does nothing. However, with several other executive orders, for example, on immigration or other administrative agencies, the executive orders have essentially gone against what Congress has intended and has found ambiguities within the law in order to exploit them and not necessarily to manage the administration of government, which is what conservatives, libertarians, and the Republican Party has been complaining about.
That's fair enough, Joe. Let's let Jerry Schuster respond.
I think the caller has a very valid point. I think the question is as much about the assumption of executive privilege broadened to the scope that it pretty much assumes the role of Congress in making those critical decisions as much as anything else. There is a word that seems to have escaped Obama from time to time, and that is compromise. And I think that there are many people who are moderates. We always refer to the heavy hitters in conservatism in both parties, but when it comes to decision-making and coalescing opinion, I think that one of the areas is compromise. And the president seems reluctant whenever he makes suggestions about certain key areas that other people just don't want to, for him not to agree with them or to give in, so to speak. It's just not fair in their minds in terms of who has the right to do what when.
Jeff, in an email, says that the fact that Obama's number of executive orders isn't as high as previous presidents is an important distinction because the Republicans today are looking aghast at Obama's executive orders, and the public is thinking that this is outrageous when Republicans have also done many more. And that's an email from Jeff, who will get the last word because we've come to time, unfortunately, for this segment. But I want to thank Dr. Jerry Schuster for joining us. He's University of Pittsburgh Professor of Presidential Rhetoric and Political Communication. Jerry Schuster, I'm sure you'll be watching the State of the Union address tonight or listening to it here on 90.5 WESA. Stay warm, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Coming up, ever wanted to just pack up and go somewhere without really knowing what your destination is? Do we have a vacation for you? It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.